From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of November, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. It is National Farm City Week, and we'll continue to explore how Extension works with the people of the state of Illinois today. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss what's been happening in the agricultural weather with Mike Tenuri. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's at tstorm.net online, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Well, as we begin today, a couple things of note. First, I'm in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention today. We'll hear more from there over the coming week. And secondly, the Farm Assets Conference is Monday. Walk-ins are welcome. The cost is $90, though I did just take a look. In the 1 o'clock hour, and the Farm Assets Conference pre-registration page is still open. If you haven't had the chance, go now. I think it should still be open for you to get registered today at farmassetsconference.com. Come and join the Extension Economist, the Extension Crop Scientist, and others at the Farm Assets Conference on Monday at the iHotel right there in Champaign.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at $6.67.5. That was up 2.25. The March at 669, a penny and a half higher today. And the May futures up one at 667.25. January beans, $14.17, down 12.25. The March 12.5 lower at 14.22.25. And November futures of next year at 13.66 and lower, down 12.5 cents. Bean meal 90 cents lower for the day. The bean oil down $1.95. Wheat futures soft red at 8.06¾, down 10¾, and the hard red 17.5 cents lower. They finished at $9.38. Live cattle futures at $1.15 higher. Feeders were up $2.50, and the lean hogs for the day 45 cents higher for 100 pounds. Matt Bennett is now here from agmarket.net to discuss the marketplace for the day. Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for being here. And first, thank you ahead of time for participating in the upcoming Farm Assets Conference on Monday. We appreciate you taking that time.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to being there.
Should be a great day. Again, if folks want to get registered, I'm pretty sure that the farmassetsconference.com registration page is still open. I had them reopen it and leave it open for a bit longer, so you can still do that and get in for $80, otherwise $90 at the door on Monday. iHotel at 8:30 a.m. Now let's talk about the marketplace. The big news today, of course, was the extension of the grain corridor from Russia, Ukraine, and through the Black Sea. What impact did that have on the trade?
Well, you know, initially, there's no question that it had a pretty negative impact. You know, you come in here and you see corn pushing double digits lower for a while. Yeah, you closed up 2.5, which was essentially 13 off the lows. I mean, we did probe double digits briefly. You know, you looked at beans were lower. But, of course, the ones that take the brunt of the blow whenever you get that sort of news is always going to be corn and wheat. And, you know, at one time, wheat was pushing mid-20s. Lower, but bottom line is that we certainly had plenty of weakness initially, but then you get the export numbers out, you know, and actually corn had best week we've seen in a long time, and beans were over 3 million metric tons, so fantastic export sales numbers, which kind of took a little bit of that sting out of the export corridor deal.
It was good news that the marketplace held. Technically, it has been looking a bit weaker. Are your expectations for it to maintain a good stance through the end of the year?
Yeah, it's a good question, Todd. But as you know, we really haven't gone anywhere since September 1st. You know, I mean, September 1st, we essentially, you know, we closed the day at 6:58. But, you know, we'd gone up to 6:73 on that particular trading session. And really, we haven't been that low since September 1st. You know, and we're looking at lows, 6-8 cents above that. And so that's kind of what we're looking at right now. But then the highs of the market today, for instance, you know, you closed December corn at 6.67¾. And, you know, to me, that's up just a little bit. It's right on the 200-day moving average. You've got some of your other moving averages a little bit higher, like your shorter-term ones, but the 100-day is below us. So, you know, right now, it just looks like a range-bound trade. And if you don't go down and violate the support on that 100-day, which is down at 650, you know, then most likely you're still just going to see this range-bound, boring, lackluster trade. I'm assuming at some point we're going to break out of this range, then it's going to be a drastic move when we do. You know, if that breakout is to the upside, hey, we're all good, no big deal, we're going to have a good year. If that's to the downside and we don't have some protection on, I think people are going to be pretty upset with themselves.
Well, let's talk about that protection, because it is for both old crop, the crop that is now in the bin, and for new crop. How much should they have protected of each in total, meaning old crop cash sales and whatever they have to protect at this point?
You know, we're down to only bushels that we put in the bin, which is going to be different for each individual producer on what their percentage is. Some are still carrying, some at the elevator, certainly understand that. Once you get around towards the first year, you're probably going to have to make some decisions there. But I don't want a lot of risk, you know, and so bushels in the bin is the only thing that we've got officially as a company. And if a person has more than maybe 40% of those of their production in their own bins, we feel strongly that they need to step in and put a floor into those. And I'm talking a very strong foot, so very close to the market. I'm only going to go out maybe towards March, because I got to think that, you know, you're going to have the opportunity to see what the market's going to do between now and then. If that puts too expensive, we can always step in and sell a call above the market, tempt the market to go up to, whatever, 7.25, 7.50. But bottom line is, I want to have a floor in place just in case. And on new crop, we're at 20% or 50% of our 23, but a lot of that is, again, on a flexible type strategy. We want producers to at least lock in a worst case scenario, make sure that their insurance price on a good chunk of their bushels, you know, is something advantageous to them, especially whenever we're putting in a crop like we are for 23. It's going to be the most expensive corn crop the U.S. producers ever put in the ground.
Yeah, so top of the range on that, what price tag do you suppose?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is that we've been doing a lot of, for instance, you know, the market closed today at 611, 612. You know, I think that if you put a floor in literally right at the market, you know, like a 610 type put option, you know, you can go up and you can sell a call anywhere from 7 to 750, depending on your flavor, you know, and then turn around and sell something on down as far as a put goes, and get a very cheap strategy. You know, if you sell a $7 call on a portion of bushels, you're still only looking at 12, 13 cents for that strategy. Now, I would personally like to have that call a little higher than that, you know, especially if I'm going to do any volume of bushels. But the main thing is having some sort of level of protection, or you could HTA some bushels. I have no issue with that. Then we can step back in and buy this, buy a call or a call spread to participate in a portion. But again, bottom line for me, something north of $6 basis of board is a really good place to at least lock in a worst case scenario. You know, and then we can manage some risk on further out as far as how we want to play.
Thanks so much, and we'll see you Monday.
Oh, absolutely. We'll see you then.
That is AgMarket.net's Matt Bennett. It's National Farm City Week from now through Thanksgiving. University of Illinois Extension is celebrating the link between rural and urban areas. Today, we'll explore the plant clinic here on campus with Diane Pleva. She is a diagnostician and the director of the University of Illinois Plant Clinic.
So in that role, I oversee the operations of the plant clinic. That involves things like invoicing, inventory, and staff administration. But what I really like doing is working in the lab to identify what's going on with the samples that we receive, and that's usually identifying pathogens and pests that are affecting the plants.
I take it that's exactly what the plant clinic is designed to do?
That is our mission, yes.
And can you tell me a bit more about that and how it works?
Yeah, so we accept samples from the general public, and that can include producers, that includes green professionals, specialty crop producers, and then also just, you know, homeowner backyard growers, things like that. And so the majority of our samples are from Illinois producers, usually corn and soybean, a little bit of wheat. But we also receive a pretty large number of samples, as I mentioned, green professionals, so arborists, landscapers. So we see a lot of tree samples, turf, ornamentals. But we also work with the State Department of Agriculture for phytosanitary certifications. So if you are a commercial producer, and this does include our agronomic crops, but also specialty crops and ornamentals, if you have to produce those crops and you want to ship them overseas, you usually need to have a phytosanitary certificate for that receiving country. The requirements are going to differ depending on the country. But we work with the Department of Agriculture to do the diagnostics so that those certificates can be produced. And then that helps, you know, support people that are shipping their plant material overseas. But again, we work with everything from someone that has a small specialty crops farm all the way up to hundreds of acres in, you know, kind of your standard corn or soybeans. And then we even work with people that have, you know, a single tomato plant in their backyard. So it's a very wide range.
It is. The phytosanitary requirements, are those things like pest and disease free of certain pest and disease, or how does it work?
Yeah, so that's going to depend on the country that's receiving the samples. In some cases, they want a declaration that the plant material is free of specific diseases or pests. So in that case, if there's kind of a laundry list of it must be free of these diseases, then we will receive the samples, and then we will do different types of testing depending on what the pathogen or the pest is and what are acceptable standards for testing. And so we can run those tests, and then we can, you know, basically issue a report saying that it was found to be disease-free. The other option, and this is what we do with actually a lot of our corn and soybeans, we get samples from the field, and this is usually done through like Illinois Crop Improvement Association, for example. So they'll send inspectors out. Those inspectors will submit samples to us, and then we just record everything that we find on that sample, and then that list of pathogens and pests is attached to that shipment. And then the receiving countries can look over that list and make sure there's nothing there that they flag as problematic. So it kind of depends. One of the reasons, actually, that the corn and soybeans is a little bit different in that we list everything we find as opposed to just testing for specific issues is that in some cases we don't always know where these shipments are going to go. And so, you know, if you're planning on shipping to country A and they need you to test for XYZ, and we do, and then all of a sudden, you know, market conditions change or, you know, plans change, and that shipment is now going to go to country B, that country may have different testing requirements. And so by listing everything that we find, that kind of makes it really flexible where that shipment can go.
You sound like you're really busy. Do you have some stats about how busy you might be? What? How many samples do you run in a year, by the way?
We stay busy, especially during the growing season. So last year, and things have gotten a little bit slower with COVID, but also sometimes a little bit more difficult. So I'm not sure it's gotten any easier. But last year we processed over 2,600 samples. And that includes plant samples. That also includes soil samples. We do a lot of nematology work. So a lot of that is soybean cyst nematode testing, either egg counts for producers or also type testing. And type testing allows us to look at the population of the nematode in the field, and then you can give recommendations for what sources of resistance, so essentially what varieties are going to be best in that field, given what we know is occurring in the soil. So we do type testing, we do, like I said, SCN egg counts, we do a lot of vermiform nematodes, that's sometimes known as corn nematode testing, and then again, like I mentioned, all the plant testing, and then we also have a fairly small molecular service that works on herbicide resistance, and we also will test seed lots for Palmer amaranth. We kind of do a little of everything, and it can be a little bit overwhelming sometimes, but it's also really exciting. Since we are a service lab, basically if there is a need for a service and it's something that we can adapt to being able to provide in our labs, I want to do that. And so there have been certain, there are certain services like the herbicide resistance testing, for example, that we started doing that because we had enough people requesting it.
Who can use the lab? You've talked a lot about ag, but other areas as well.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we get, again, a lot of corn, soybean, some wheat samples that come in, but we actually get a fairly large, about 20% of our samples are what we call horticulture. So that's going to include things like trees, turf, ornamentals, both woody and herbaceous ornamentals. We get fruit, tree fruit and small fruit samples, vegetable samples. We also do insect and plant identification, so we don't get a lot of those samples, but we will get the occasional, you know, critter. Thankfully, they're very small. We so far have not gotten any, like, mammals that people are asking us to identify. But, you know, yeah, so it's kind of anything that is garden or field adjacent or related, we get samples. We also occasionally get samples of even things like bed bugs, you know, if people are concerned about if they're finding small critters in their house, we'll get household insects. So it's pretty open. Thankfully, we have a pretty small staff, but we have specialists on campus that we can also work with. And so there are a number of professors and researchers and specialists, many of them affiliated with Extension, that every so often they'll get an email from me basically like, I got this sample and I don't really know, you know, what to do with it, but I think that it has to do with your specialty. Could I bring it over for you to look at? Could you stop by and take a peek? That sort of thing. And so we kind of all work together to try and get answers for our clients.
It sounds like the broad knowledge base you're able to tap at the university and what the plant clinic does really makes a difference for the state then.
That is one of the strengths, is being able to draw in, again, on the specialists, the researchers, professors, and the extension teams, both in the field, so, or, you know, across the state, so not just the ones on campus, but working with extension people across the state, working with campus specialists, it really helps, because one of the things I love about working at the clinic is every day is at least a possibility for something new, because you never know what sample you're going to get. But it can also be a bit of a challenge when you get a sample that you personally have never worked on before. Or my background is in corn and soybean pathology, so I see a lot of corn and soybean diseases. I've taken entomology classes, but that's not my specialty. So I can identify a lot of common insects, and I can identify kind of groups of insects. But again, if we're getting down to the difference between a bed bug and a bat bug, I'm going to bring in an entomologist, because those are very small differences. They're very specific differences, and the management's going to be very different. So the results are, you know, it really is going to be different for the client how they manage a bed bug versus a bat bug, for example. So I want to make sure that we're giving people as specific and accurate of information as possible.
It sounds like you really love your job and your place in your job as well.
I do. I like the lab work much more than the administrative side. But I really enjoy knowing that what I do has an impact on individuals and also on our state. I think, you know, the work that we do here, it helps keep Illinois agriculture healthy. It helps keep it productive, which is good for producers, but it's also good for the overall economy, for our communities. And I'm honestly kind of honored to be part of that. But it's also just a fun job. Every day when we open samples, we don't know what we're going to get. It's kind of exciting. And diagnostics itself is kind of like a little mystery, so it kind of keeps you interested, and I feel like I'm always either learning something new or seeing something new, so I feel like I'm kept on my toes quite a bit.
Thank you for being on your toes with me today.
Not a problem. Thank you, Todd.
That's Diane Plewa. She is the director of the University of Illinois Plant Clinic. We're celebrating National Farm City Week, highlighting some of the ways Extension is woven into the social and educational fabric connecting the rural and urban areas of America. On this Thursday, let's check in with Mike Tenura. He is at T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net to take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. Great being here. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin in South America. We'll work our way from Argentina through Brazil. Of course, we've talked about dry conditions, drought, long-running in Argentina for some time. What are conditions like today?
Well, it's still very dry. They did see some decent rains a few days ago, and they saw some decent rains a couple weeks before that. So if you just look at rainfall over the last 3 to 4 weeks, it doesn't look all that unusual across Argentina. The problem is that if you extend further back into time, that's where things really start to show up. We basically need a little bit more than 2 inches of rain through the end of the month, else the period of May through November and September through November will end up being the driest in 44 years of record. On top of that, if we don't see about an inch of rain over the next 2 weeks, we'll end up having the driest October and November on record. So we need rain. We are going to see a little bit over the next few days. And the way it looks at the moment, we'll probably end up seeing anywhere from 2/3 of an inch to 1 1/3 inches of rain in some of these key growing areas. So what that means for the historical record is that we'll still end up being the driest on record over the last 90 days and still the driest on record over the last 210 days. But if we look at it over the last 60 days, we'll be right around that number one driest, maybe number two or number three driest, going back to 1979. So Todd, weather is still going to be very important once we get into December, despite some of the rains that are coming up. And keep in mind, it's going to be hot. High temperatures neared 100 degrees yesterday, and that's very early to see heat like that. And it'll be pretty close to 95 degrees over many days over the next 2 weeks.
In Brazil, are conditions better?
Well, they've been drying out a little bit, but they've certainly seen more rains than we've had in Argentina over the last several weeks and over the last several months. Dryness is creeping up a little bit on different corn and soybean areas, so we are going to see need to see more rains coming up. There will be a decent round of storms on Monday and Tuesday, and then those will extend into the northern soybean regions later on next week. But those southern areas are still going to be on the edge of dryness. So the story in Brazil is not concrete. We've not been as dry as Argentina. We do have some rain coming up, but we'll need to see those rains continue. And more than likely, at least southern growing areas and parts of Paraguay are going to be asking for rain once we get into early December.
Here in the United States, dry conditions persist in the western part of the Corn Belt, certainly into the growing regions for hard red winter wheat. Can you tell me about those conditions as we've gotten much, much colder?
Well, you're right. It is much colder, and that cold weather will stick around for a few more days. Once we get into next week, things will start to warm up. But with that warm up, there will not be much rain or snow. It'll be very dry out there in the plains over the next week or two. There's only a low chance for some rain around 1 week from today on Thanksgiving, and that would be in parts of Oklahoma and Texas. But that chance appears to be fairly low just because of low humidities and that the setup is not quite right. So if we're correct in that, it'll be very dry leading right into December, and that drought that's in place there is going to continue. Now, some people might be saying, when will this drought break in the hard red winter wheat areas? Well, typically a drought won't break until the spring. The months of December, January, and February are usually very dry across that part of the country. That's because of their dry climate. So you need to get into March and April before a drought's going to break in the plains.
Hey, thank you very much. We'll talk with you again, not next week because it's Thanksgiving, but the following week.
Yeah, that sounds great. Have a happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we'll talk again soon.
The same to yours. That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. If you have not gotten your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference on Monday, no worries. Walk-ins are welcome. $90 at the door. We open at 8:30 a.m. at the iHotel right here in Champaign, Urbana.